The criminal career of Thunderbolt Dobney began on a foggy November evening outside the Waxwork Museum. Thunderbolt had never thought of himself as a criminal. He was a mild and scholarly youth, but he was a passionate collector of curiosities, and for some days now he had been filled with desire for the odd-shaped lump of lead belonging to Harry Fitchett, a boy in his class. Finally, after much bargaining, he had persuaded Harry to swap it for a length of slingshot rubber. The exchange took place under a hissing gaslight by the waxworks entrance. "This is style and proper, this lead," said Harry. "It came off that old statue of King Neptune outside the Lamb and Flag. You remember?" The knowledge that he was holding a piece of criminal history added to Thunderbolt's pride. Harry ran off, twanging his length of rubber at the legs of passers-by, and Thunderbolt dropped the lead into his pocket with a guilty thrill. The others, meanwhile, were gazing up at the poster advertising the latest attraction at the waxworks. "A victim of the atrocious death of a thousand cuts," read Benny Kaminsky. Benny was a stocky, dark-haired boy of 11. When you saw Benny at first, you took him for an ordinary boy. When you'd known him for half an hour, you were convinced he was a genius. When you'd known him for a day, you suspected he was the devil, but by then it was too late. You were drawn in. Everyone who knew Benny was drawn in because he was less like a boy than a whirlpool. The New Cut gang were proud to follow him. Thunderbolt peered at the poster Benny was looking at. "Ah, I read about that in the encyclopedia," he said. "What they do is they tie him up and slice bits off him with a razor. They start at the feet and work up. Takes hours," he added enthusiastically, pushing his glasses up with a grimy finger. "Well," said Bridie, "are we going in or not?" Bridie Malone was red-haired and red-tempered, and at least as fierce as Benny. Everywhere that Bridie went, her little brother Sharky Bob came too. He was a placid and benevolent child who would eat anything, and often did. The others didn't mind having Sharky about, because they'd often won bets on his ability to chew up and swallow dog biscuits, champagne corks, fish heads, and anything else the sporting citizens of Lambeth offered him. He was plucking at Bridie's sleeve now. "Dippy selling chestnuts," he said. "I seen him just now. I likes chestnuts," he added helpfully. So did they all. The death of a thousand cuts forgotten, they streamed across the road and around the corner to Rummage's Emporium, where Dippy Hitchcock had set up his hot chestnut stand. Rummage's Emporium took up several shop fronts. It was the biggest store in Lambeth, and the windows were blazing with light and streaming with condensation. Old Dippy was selling some chestnuts to a customer who'd just come out, and he greeted the kids cheerfully. "Free penneth, please, Dippy," said Benny. He had earned a shilling earlier that day by holding some horses for the Thompson brothers, removals, funerals and seaside excursions. "You got 16 chestnuts for a penny, so that would mean 12 each." The kids stood around Dippy's little stove to eat them, fishing the smoking nuts out of the triangular twists of paper and rolling them between their palms to loosen the skin. "You been to the waxworks, then?" said Dippy. "I'd like to be a waxwork." "They don't make waxworks of hot chestnut men," said Thunderbolt. "Only kings and criminals and people like that."
"I used to be a criminal," said Dippy. "I set out to be a pickpocket, but I had to give it up on account of me conscience."
"Unless you're a celebrated murderer, it's not worth mentioning crime," said Benny. "Ain't you done anything else to make you famous, Dippy?"
Dippy rubbed his bristly jaw.
"Nah," he said mournfully. "But I'd love to be a waxwork. Make me feel me laugh had been worthwhile, somehow."
Another customer came out of Rummage's and bought a pennyworth of chestnuts, paying with a sixpence. Bridie was interested in this waxwork talk, but even more interested in the nearest window, where a stout and shiny man called Mr. Paget, the gentleman's outfitting manager, was clambering about, arranging a mannequin. Every time he lifted the arm into position and turned round to pick up some gloves from behind him, the arm fell down again, and he got more and more vexed and more shiny. The arm came up, the arm fell down. He dropped the gloves. The dummy swung forward and butted him on the nose. He said, very visibly, a wicked word,
and looked guiltily out at the pair of wide blue eyes watching him. Bridie turned at once to a kindly old gentleman passing by and asked him what the word meant, pointing at Mr. Padgett.
"No, no!"
Mr. Padgett mouthed in horror and waved his hands, but then had to lurch sideways to catch the dummy and knocked over a chair, which was the point when Mr. Rummidge stormed out of the main entrance.
"Get away from that window!" he bellowed, shaking his fists. "I will not have vagrants and costermongers on my property. I'll have the law on you, smoking up my windows and leaving your filthy rubbish on the pavement. Get away! Go on, hook it!"